who is our president of U.S. operations with Elanco, as well as Dr. Mike Brum, former professor at University of Nebraska, some time at Oklahoma State, has been in private consultancy for about the past 8 years. So we also have Grady Bishop, who's the head of our pork business unit, our swine business unit, and Grady will join us for question and answer. We've got about 15 minutes of remarks from Rob, a few minutes of comments from Dr. Brum, and we'll have plenty of time for Q&A. So thank you. Thank you all for being here. Rob, I'll turn it over to you.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for being here at this early hour. I grew up on a dairy farm, so this isn't too early for me, but it's early to have this kind of forum, so we really appreciate your attendance. I just have to start by saying that we're really proud to join forces with NutriBlend on this tour, and this iteration. And we're so fortunate to have celebrity spokespeople like Mark Miller and Bill Goldberg, who aren't just mercenaries for hire. They believe this. It's in their hearts. And you can see that. I think you can see that come through, the conviction that they have for what they're talking about. This has gotten very personal for them. So we're really proud of that. We think that this is a very, very strong next iteration of what we're trying to accomplish and to get the word out much more broadly than what we have in the past. So I hope you see that and feel that as well. This morning, in just a few minutes, I have just a few slides to share with you. I want to talk with you about our food forward analysis that we've done in the swine sector, in the pork sector. We've done this for dairy and for the egg industry that kind of defines what our gap is and what our challenge is going forward, and how we can meet that challenge, how we can address that challenge. So today is going to be very much pork-centered, as you would imagine, here at the World Pork Expo. The first thing I'd say to you is, and I think most of you are probably aware by now of our Enough report that we issued earlier this year, and what the focus of that is. But just to review very quickly for you, we want to, in the Enough report, we want to expand the discussion beyond just hunger, severe hunger and malnutrition, which is where we have been in our messaging in the last couple of years, and expand that discussion across the entire spectrum of food security today. So to expand the discussion not just to the extreme that's represented here on the left, but all the way across the spectrum that touches us even more in the United States. It's not about just about starving children in Africa. It's about food insecurity that we have right here in the United States in our own communities. Approximately 1 in 5 children here in the United States, at least at some point, don't know where their next meal is going to come from. And that next meal in the evening after they get home from school may be a bag of potato chips and a 2-liter of pop. And they're not getting the nutrition that they need in that kind of setting. So this discussion is intended to be broadened across that spectrum and how we address that, how we make good, affordable, nutritious food more available to that segment, as well as addressing the starving and those that are malnourished in other parts of the world. So a couple of statistics to just ground us on realities. The very first, and we're very familiar with this by now, that the world population is going to grow from 7 billion to 9 billion. That's nearly a 30% increase in the next 40 years. That's not insignificant. That is a big part of this equation of why we have gaps and why we anticipate gaps and why we need to address it. We need to start working on it now. But what we have emphasized more in this iteration, it's not just the 2 billion, the 7 to 9 billion growth, it's the growth in the middle class. And that's going to rise to 3 billion. We're going to grow the middle class by 3 billion globally here, and most of that's going to come by the end of this decade. That really further underscores the challenge that's in front of us. Because the very first thing you know, the very first thing that families do when they have more disposable income in developing nations is they invest in their diets. That's the first thing that they do. And that's why there's going to be an exponential increase in the demand for meat, milk, and eggs. Okay, so that's the first reality. The second reality is because of that, there will be a 60% increase estimated by the FAO in the demand for meat, milk, and eggs. And there's different dynamics in each of those segments. We're going to talk about the pork segment today. So a 60% increase, that's the challenge that faces us. And then finally, the resource issue. So the World Wildlife Fund has estimated, and we agree with calculations, that we are consuming resources today, or it takes us a year and a half, better said, a year and a half to replenish the resources that we consume in a year today. Now, you don't have to be math wizards and geniuses to know you can't do that very long, right? You can't do that for a sustained number of years before you're out of resources. So it's not just about providing more, producing more. It's about doing it more efficiently and saving resources at the same time. So those are the three realities that we need to acknowledge and we need to address head on. This is our vision. In one slide, this is Elanco's vision, and I think many others of our partners, customers, and collaborators around the world for a more food secure tomorrow. And it encompasses all of this in one slide. First of all, accessibility of food, accessibility of more meat, milk, and eggs, and what that will do in giving people more nutritious choices. It's about affordability. So that food is affordable. It's not just accessible, it's affordable as well. And how that can also improve lifestyles. And when you have the first two, if it's affordable and accessible, and people can invest in their diets and they have more nutritious choices, then health increases. Our parent company, Eli Lilly and Company, is in the human pharmaceutical business. And one of the reasons they are so supportive of their animal health business is they get the connection. People have to eat and have a certain nutrition plane before you can worry about curing disease. Hunger is the first thing that has to be solved. And then we talk about the resource question. How can we do more with less? How can we decrease, not just hold flat, but decrease the carbon footprint? And then finally, stability. If all of those things come into play, we see a more peaceful world, a more stable world. I think the quote from Norman Borlaug, or to paraphrase, really sums it up. We can't build a peaceful planet on empty stomachs and on human misery. We've got to address that first. And we've seen the unrest in the world in the last 5 to 10 years. And so much of that is driven from hunger. People tired of being hungry and not knowing where their next meal is coming from. So that's our vision. All right, that's our vision. To address those things so ultimately people have enriched lives, better lives, and we have a more stable, peaceful world. And in the center of this, that's where we believe the answer is. It's in innovation, it's in choice, consumer choice, and it's in trade. And we're not going to talk about choice and trade today, unless we do it in the Q&A section. We're going to focus on the innovation piece. But just let me sum it up by saying the reason that choice is important, we need to understand where the consumer really is, particularly in our country. And all the credible research that's been done with consumers in the United States in the last year, you sum it all up, and you analyze it, 95% of consumers make their choices in the meat, milk, and egg cases, or sections of the dairy, or of the grocery market, based on nutrition, cost, and taste. That's how they make their choices. It's not about whether or not they want technology. The segment that is concerned about how things were raised, where it was raised, and whether or not it was this practice or this technology was used is very, very small. And we need to keep that in perspective. And we need to make sure we keep that small, that people have the right information to make their decisions. So that's the choice element. The trade segment, very simply, is food's got to move. If we produce it and it's available, we need to get it where it needs to be. And that's probably the most complex part of this whole debate, this whole challenge that we have in front of us, because there's so many barriers that are artificial, so much going on between different countries that food isn't allowed to move to the extent it would today. And we have a lot of research to say when it is allowed to move, then people's lives are changed, as we have outlined here. But let's talk a little bit about the challenge that lies ahead here in the pork segment. We have a very big success story, a great success story in pork. We have twice as much pork available per person per week today than we did in 1961, 50 years ago. The other segments that we're talking about, dairy in particular, that's not the case. Dairy has not, while we've increased productivity, it's not keeping up with demand. We have a much better success story here in pork. But that's not the end of the story. We can't stop, because the FAO estimates that we need to increase production so that we can have 12 ounces, not just 10.7 ounces per person per week, but 12 ounces per person a week available by 2050. Now, first you're saying, well, Rob, what? That doesn't seem insurmountable, right? 1.3, when we've doubled in the last 50 years, shouldn't we be able to do 1.3 more in the next 40 years? Well, let's think about that for a second. Yes, to answer you right off the bat, yes, we think it's doable. But it's not as easy as what you might think just by looking at this statistic. Because what it means is, if you take into account the population growth, growing by nearly 30%, so we got 30% more people to feed, and then you increase consumption by 12 or 13%, which is what we said before, 10.7 to 12 ounces, this is what it means. We've got to increase pork production by 50%. By 50% in the next 40 years. So while we think that's doable, that is not necessarily easy. And that's why we need to get on it and we need to address it today. So we're going to suggest to you and the rest of the industry what it's going to take to do that. You know, the first thing that your mind may go to is, well, we just raise more pigs. You know, how are we going to meet it? We just raise more pigs. Well, today, we produce globally about 1.4 billion pigs to get us to that 10.7 ounces per person per week. And you do the math quickly, and if we're going to do it just on increased number of pigs, well, it's going to take 50% more pigs. Given constant efficiency and so on and so forth, that could be where the mind goes, to where a lot of people's minds go. And we don't think that's the answer, for a very obvious reason. You put on another 700 million pigs and increase the pig population to 2 billion versus the 1.4 billion today, then you're going to consume a lot more resources. And here's the estimation for feed, water, and land that it would take. Well, go back to the reality that we acknowledged in the very very second slide. We're already in 1 year consuming, or it takes a year and a half to replenish the resources that we're using in a year right now. This is not the answer. It does not address that situation. And, you know, I believe with all my heart, this is one of the messages that we have not emphasized enough, and we're not getting out there to the public, and even to those that are part of the food chain, retailers and processors and so on and so forth. This is an area we must talk more about. We still need to talk about science, and we still need to talk about economics. Those are important pillars. But talking about the impact on resources is something virtually everyone can relate to. It's on everyone's mind. It's on consumers' minds, and it's certainly on those in the food chain, further up in the food chain's mind. So we don't think that's the answer. Here's where we think the answer lies. So So we've done analysis on this. We've commissioned others to do the work on this. And this is where we believe the answer is. And this is why it's not as simple as what it may look like, that 1.3 ounces per person. This is how we can increase pork production by 50% and actually utilize less resources. Now, this analysis doesn't assume we hold the pig population flat. To meet the demand, even with this increased productivity, we still would have to increase the swine herd or the number of pigs that are produced each year by about 300 million. So it's 300 million, not 700 million. But you look at history, you look at where global, obviously we've got a very successful productivity story in the last 50 years, but global pig production today takes about almost 39 weeks to get a pig to 229 pounds. That's average across the globe. The very best producers, the global leaders, which exist right here in the United States, are getting pigs to 273 pounds in 28 weeks. So a very big success story there, and quite a gap. So for this to work, and for us to increase our production by 50%, our output by 50%, we'll need to get the entire global plain, the average, up to 282 pounds in 25 weeks. So that's a big gap from where the average is today to where we need to be by 2050. It's not an insignificant challenge. We believe it's doable. So the best producers are making use of the best available technology, innovation, management practices. They're making use of all that. That's why it's so important that we continue to fight for the right of producers to utilize all the tools that are available to them, all the tools that are currently in their toolbox, and to continue to open the door in the pathway for new technologies, new innovation to be introduced. That's why we have to understand where the consumer's at and make sure that we continue to do a good job of educating the food chain. That's where all our emphasis has been in the last 7 years. Getting the food chain aligned and then move further into consumer messaging so that that 95% today that primarily makes their decisions on cost, nutrition, and taste, that doesn't shrink and that people get more concerned or a bigger percentage of the population get more concerned about things that they really shouldn't be concerned about. They understand this dynamic. So that's how we can do it. And we know enough about what's in our pipeline, what's in the pipeline of other innovators, and how pork is produced efficiently today in our country. We believe this is doable. This is doable. But it's imperative that producers around the world have access to the innovation and technology that makes this possible. So, this is the picture in terms of impact on resources. Just draw your attention to the far right-hand column in each of these. So even with more pigs, 300 million more pigs, if we increase productivity to the plane that I talked about previously, we will utilize less resources than what we are today in each category, feed, water, and land. And there's some pretty sophisticated analysis behind this. So this isn't just these are not made up numbers. So if you quantify that into sound bites, into pictures that people can relate to, so 434 million tons of feed saved, that's enough to fill rail cars that will circle the globe twice. So wrap that around your mind. That's a big pile of feed. Land saved, the area of Texas and California combined. And water saved, The domestic usage in billions of 260 billion gallons, that's the annual household consumption of New York City and Philadelphia. So a significant impact on resources. And it was Jason Clay that said from a World Wildlife Fund that in order to meet the demand responsibly, we have got to freeze the global footprint on food. So this doesn't just freeze it, it reduces it. That's our message. And you know, in the last 60 years, we have pretty much frozen the footprint here in the United States. We've increased productivity, agricultural productivity, by 2.5 times where it was 60 years ago. And our inputs have been constant. But it's possible even to use less than what we are today in the pork industry. It is possible. Now, one other thing that I'd like to address quickly is, why is animal protein so important? Because our detractors, those that look at things differently than what we do, would say, well, why not plant source protein? Why do you have to do it through animals? That seems inefficient. And aren't animals competing for foodstuffs with people? Well, this landmark study really spoke to me, and it really put it in context for me. This was a study that was done in Kenya with school-age children over five school terms. So not just one term, but a progression over terms. And it was done with several universities. Two of the main universities involved in this was the University of Nairobi and the University of Southern California. Incredible piece of research. So over five school terms, they took the current normal diets of those school children and then tested them at the end of five school terms. The result of this control group was their test scores actually went down over five school terms. When they were supplemented with additional energy through oils, then they had less decline in scores. So it helped some. But then when you started putting animal source protein in the diets, meat and milk or dairy products, test scores went up. So that's very sound science, empirical evidence that there's something about animal source protein that makes a difference in the diets of kids, or in the health of kids and in their mental and cognitive development. So if you really look at the nutritional plane, it's not just the protein, the 50 grams of protein that we need on a daily basis. It adds additional vitamin B, vitamin B12, and additional zinc into the diets, much more than what a rice and bean diet would. The other thing I'd tell you, it's not just these scores that spoke to me. The conclusions of the researchers in this, there are other statistics as well. So much less morbidity in the animal source protein group. Stronger leadership behaviors exhibited by these children. More lean body mass. And I guess the overall conclusion was that animal source protein in the diet, even at these modest levels that were introduced, helped children reach their full human potential. Now, if that doesn't grip your heart, I mean, seeing a child deprived of proper nutrition just rips my heart out. And I have seen it. I've traveled enough around the world, I've seen it. And it is heartbreaking. Kids did not make that choice to come into the world and to be hungry and be deprived of the nutrition that they deserve. So animal source protein in the diet is important. This one study, and there are others, this one study demonstrates that. All right, real quickly in close here. This is what we're trying to accomplish with our Enough Report and the movement that we're trying to start here. There are several things that we'd like to accomplish this year. I already talked to you about one. So expanding our message here and talking about food security across the spectrum here. from the very hungry and starving and malnutritious to what we experience right here in the United States. And the reason for that is it's real, right? There is a real spectrum there. And to get the American public motivated behind this, it has to touch them. So many people cannot relate. They've never experienced what goes on in developing nations. Yes, they get it mentally, but it doesn't get here. But when they see it and experience it in their own communities, then they're motivated to act. And these messages that we are trying to send resonate more. So we're getting involved, much more involved in social media. New area for us, but our goal is to create a pot, not just monitor the discussion, but shape the discussion out there and get at least a million positive impressions with positive messages, with the right messages out there on a weekly basis. And we are doing that. We have been successful in doing that, and that continues to build. We're going to exceed that goal. Building a movement with 10,000 individuals that have signed up and have gone to sensibletable.com and signed up and said, I'm in. I am in. And then once a quarter, they get a package. They get resources to help them carry the message forward. So we want 10,000 ambassadors out there, not just, you know, a handful of people at Elanco and our industry partners delivering this message. But we have 10,000 ambassadors out there. And then, you know, our primary way as a company to affect this is continue to introduce innovation to the marketplace, both in products and in services. Things that help producers become more efficient. That is the primary way that we're going to affect this. But not just with our business model, but what we do, that's the fifth point, what we do personally with our time. So this isn't just about our business model, it's about what we do, what we contribute as individuals. Elanco gives one half day per quarter to each individual in the company to get involved in their local communities in whichever way they choose. Working in a food bank, helping develop a backpack program, to address hunger in the school system on the weekends or during the summer. Whatever it is, to get involved in their local communities. I believe, hunger and food security is a big issue. And you could throw up your hands and say, what can I do about it, right? Anything I could do is like a spit in the ocean. But that's the wrong attitude to have. We all need to have the attitude to do what we can with what we have when we can. And that's what we're trying to do from a very practical standpoint. And put our own efforts behind it as well. And we encourage all of our industry partners to look at it the same way. So that's really what we hope to accomplish this time around with this iteration, with these messages. That's the end of my remarks, and we're going to take questions a little later on. But I'd like to, Colleen, do you want to, all right, Dr. Brum, we're going to have Dr. Brum come up and give us his view and his take on this. We're really glad to have him here today. Welcome, Dr. Brown.
Oh, I have no slides.
No slides? Okay.
No. I'm exposing myself, literally, in terms of being with you.
You'd rather have slides.
Obviously, I know some members of the press too well on that. Thank you for Elanco. And their effort is indeed to be applauded. I have spent, at this point, over 40 years in swine research. I'm one of the older people in the industry. I'm old, okay? And I have witnessed the rate of change and the increasing rate of change that we've done. I started swine research right out of the U.S. Army in 1974 as a graduate student. And the first research that I did when I joined the faculty at the University of Nebraska, that was published, you know, we had a daily gain of 1.3 pounds of per day of pigs in a grow finisher, almost 3.4 pounds of feed per pound to gain. Today's industry standard of the average of all producers that participate in record systems that we can find in 2012 was very close to 1.8 pounds of gain per day on about a 2.8 pounds of feed. Remarkable, if you look at that. The unseen in all of that is part of what goes into making that whole resource utilization better is we've changed the composition of the animal. If you think back, and I think back, extreme back fat, right? We used to talk about if we could get back fat under an inch and a half on a pig, that was wonderful. And today, we've been slaughtering some pigs experimentally recently above 300 pounds, and they're at 0.7, 0.8 inches back fat. Well, if there's less back fat, what's more of? More animal protein. And those efficiencies translate very clearly all the way through as to what's there. So it isn't just the pigs are bigger, they grow faster. It's their underlying composition is better. And that is also another remarkable trend that will continue. I speak with producer groups around the world in my consulting business and when I was at the University of Nebraska, and I've had wonderful opportunities to meet many marvelous people. The U.S. around the world is looked at as the leader in pork production. Just wherever I go, how do we get to be like the U.S. in efficiencies? How do we get to be like the U.S. in availability of resources to our consumers and on and on? So we are clearly an important component in meeting the world's animal protein needs for a lot of reasons. So let's talk about the future. He says we have to get 9 more pounds per pig in addition to 300 million more pigs, if I remember that number right. Right? So let's talk about how that's going to happen, because that's a big number, 300 million pigs. U.S. inventory is about 600 million pigs, 60 million pigs. So 300 million is a lot of pigs, and that's obviously going to be a lot of controversy in rural communities and other associated with animal facilities, and all of that. Number one message we also need to keep in mind is that in rural communities, both here in the Midwest and other countries, animal agriculture is stability in a rural community. If the world is going to be fed by grain proteins, you can have 5 farmers do a whole county. Okay? That isn't going to be stability in rural communities, because you don't have a population base to work from. Animal agriculture needs people, okay? And we don't need them at the same skill level. We need them at better skill levels than we did 40 years ago because of the way we've doing it. So let's talk the production. Where do I think, and it's I've published this data in several various forms over the year. Where do I think we're going to go? Some point in the future in the U.S., as a leader, we will have 2 pounds of daily gain on 2 pounds of feed, corrected for calories and all of that. 2 and 2. Holy smokes. You know, the U.S., and that's from weaning to slaughter. Okay, so taking a pig that's 5 kilos or 12 pounds all the way to some heavyweight on 2 pounds of input, and it's going to grow at 2 pounds a day. Are we there yet? We're getting close on some individual systems. The best of the best are getting close already. So it will come. We're going to have, we hear a lot about 30 pigs per mated female per year. We already have production systems in the U.S. that are averaging above that. We start talking now a target of 40, 42 pigs per mated female per year. Utilize, you know, more out of that. It just tremendous kinds of numbers when you look at that. We currently in the U.S. Do not get very much. We're very productive, but we're going to start talking of 4 tons of animal growth sold per female. Okay, you know, so you start thinking about the resources that go into a population that sits there, right? there's a lot of resources that go into the adult breeding population. And if you can get more animals out of it downstream, that maximizes all the efficiency, all your genetic costs and all of that. And we're going to continue to innovate on our ways of housing animals. I've been involved in some green barn projects with our target in terms of our thought process, 50% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, 50% reduction in energy use in the facility, and thinking about in 5 or 10 years, what would that barn look like? How would we house those pigs? What would it mean in the community? And I just saw a paper from Germany, I believe it was the other day, in doing some literature work, that some of the ideas we were thinking about are being tried on some farms. They're not affordable yet, but they're being tried. So we have very clear goals, and as the National Pork Board has said, we've made clear progress in our already versus 20 and 30 years ago. Our footprint in the world is smaller, and we have more product for our consumers. So we have a remarkable story to tell. We're excited about the opportunities that are present for the U.S. participation as a leader in the world. Last night, I had shared a beverage with a friend of mine from England, and we talked about who is going to be the future of animal agriculture. And at this point, the European Union is not seen, even by the Europeans, as the future. They've put too many constraints on their systems for a whole host of reasons, including the animal welfare, including the risk. I don't want any zero risk or that. And they clearly don't see themselves as being leader. The U.S. is still, because of our ability to produce so well, of our great heartland system. Animal agriculture is going to continue to be where the food resources are for the animal. You know, I keep saying that pork production in the U.S. will continue to concentrate wherever the grain is produced. Right? It makes more sense. It's much more efficient worldwide to transport the complete product than it is to take the grain to someplace. You start looking at those kinds of economics. So where's the growth going to be in animal agriculture? The Midwest, in the U.S., at least in pork production. It'll probably be as Brazil, Argentina expand their grain production and look for ways to change that grain into a high-value resource, they will do something. Ukraine and the former Russian, what do you say? I think I just said it. In terms of their potential, that's a huge unknown. China would love to raise more. You know, half of the world's pigs are in China. And if you've been to China, what are we going to do with all of that? In the U.S. and in Brazil and in Russia, we raise pigs near our land base. We can utilize all of our resources in the continuous cycle. Manure has value, extremely good value. In China, what does manure have? It's manure, right? And all that connotates, indeed, is there. So I'm excited about that technology. The consumers get nervous. Some of that is we chose wrong names unknowingly. We talk as scientists, not as people with a heart. I speak as a person with a heart about the needs and what's there.